Dr. Brown here, continuing with the female reproductive system and breast disease. Placental inflammation and infections do certainly occur and during a term pregnancy, and one of the biggest issues here has to do with whether something can get into the amniotic sac. Generally, this is completely sterile, but we can get infections of bacteria from the vagina in there. We can also have a variety of things that will either directly infect the placenta or cross the placenta to infect the fetus. I'm not going to dwell on that much. Let's go ahead in there and take a look at what's known as ectopic pregnancy. We've already mentioned with respect to scarring of the fallopian tubes and various things, where will a conceptus implant? And if it doesn't implant right in kind of in the middle of the uterus, there's going to be a real problem as it increases in size. And here we're taking a look at several examples of that. Here in the middle would be a what's called a cornuule, and that means it implants right there in the very beginning of the uterus. There's no room for it to grow. Here's an ectopic pregnancy on the ovary. Again, scarred fallopian tubes mean it can happen right there and stay in the fallopian tube. They're going to blow up, very painful, bleed to death, or it might be out somewhere in the in the abdominal cavity. So conceptus may actually end up outside of the uterus. Today, we can surgically take care of that, and during an initial workup and ultrasound, we know where it is, where it's implanted, and so forth. But in years past, of course, people didn't until things really went wrong. Here happens to be an example of a fallopian tube. That's what this is. It's ruptured, and there is the conceptus that was in the fallopian tube. You can see the developing embryo. Now, sometimes we have sort of malignant or quasi-malignant transformation of the placenta, or a what's called a molar pregnancy, which is no pregnancy at all, really, but is an egg that might be fertilized by two sperm that had no nucleus from the no female or maternal nucleus. And these develop as what are called hydatidiform moles, and either complete or partial, as we call it, based on the genetics of them. And these can invade. They look like a bunch of cluster of grapes, grossly, because they're a very bizarre placenta. There is no conceptus, or maybe there was, and now it's gone. And so the hydatidiform mole, this is showing what happens here with a multiple sperm implantation. But again, the important thing is that there's no maternal DNA. It's just a naked of sort of egg cytoplasm. And you only have a just the male component is here. So this would be an example of a complete mole. Can be either an XX or XY, but again, the DNA comes from the sperm as opposed to anything that's in the maternal side of things. A partial mole, there is still DNA from the mother. There's still the nucleus within the egg, but maybe multiple sperm, and you end up with a very peculiar trisomic situation. And what this then looks like, this is what it looks like. Here's a complete hydatidiform mole. And they all just look like it's a placental tissue of sorts, and it looks like a cluster of grapes. This grows in the placenta, in the uterus. It can invade the placenta. By definition, it does not spread, or if it does, then that's something else. It's not a mole anymore. An invasive mole is one that invades into the wall of the uterus, and that's what we're looking at here, but it doesn't metastasize into the lungs, I don't think, anyway. Here we're taking a look at choriocarcinoma. This is a different beast. This is the kind of malignancy that we saw in the testis that can be so aggressive. These can have extremely high, as will these moles. They'll have very high beta-HCG levels. And so we'll see a woman who's quite large for dates because the growth of this thing and just extraordinarily high beta-HCG. So there's a distinction between an invasive mole, which stays in the uterus, but invades the wall of the uterus, but doesn't go beyond, and a choriocarcinoma, which metastasizes to the lung, bones, brain, goes all over the place. So that is, those are issues with the placenta. I'm going to avoid preeclampsia and eclampsia, and we're going to go straight to breast here. Breast pathology comes down to a couple of things. We'll be tumors, and infections or inflammation, at least a female breast. Now, the female breast is different than the male breast because it does have the secretory element as well as ducts. Male breast does not have the secretory element. Nipples on a man will have some ductwork. They just sort of blind in to get into the connective tissue below. Here we're taking a look at the normal situation, and there are a variety of places where infections can set up. It typically does not happen outside of a mother who's lactating, who may have a lot of milk production and so forth. Getting an abscess or something in the breast is unusual outside of that. So inflammation does occur, infections can occur up in the ducts and so forth, but generally speaking it is due to the associated with pregnancy and breastfeeding. And this is showing where not only the components but also in the lower frame here where the tumors will arise. Now many women will have what's called fibrocystic change. We used to say fibrocystic disease, but we don't do that anymore. And this percentage is showing that this is the actual percentage of all women. So 40 to 50% are going to have fibrocystic change. This is a benign condition. It's bilateral. That's a very important distinction. We'll see it in both breasts. It's spread all over the place. It's not localized. Many cysts and scarring and even some inflammation. People think it's related to the caffeine that's in our diet, tea and Coke and things like that. And the caffeine some way changes the way in which the breast ductal element works. You'll notice that the minority of people, 30% who have no disease at all here, and so cancer and fibroadenomas, the fibroadenoma being benign and cancer, represent a small percentage, but again, we're looking at 10 and 7% of all women. Fibrocystic change is the most common thing, but the problem with it is making the distinction between, is this benign or malignant when we have masses in the breast? We'll talk a little bit about that in just a second here. So we'll see in the case of fibrocystic, we'll see ductal proliferation and stromal scarring and things like that. Here is an example of a cyst. The one on top shows this kind of so-called blue dome cyst, but there are multiple cysts within the breast tissue. This is a biopsy. Here's fat. Here's some kind of scarred connective tissue, but you got plenty of cystic areas in there. Microscopically, we see some ductal proliferation, but it's normal ducts. They're not abnormal for the most part. If we do see abnormality, then we're concerned about that. Connective tissue, some scarring in here. This is a big cyst over here, wall of a cyst, and here's a cyst lumen. So you can imagine these are all over. It's bilateral. That's an important distinction. I always ask a question about that. All right, now we're taking a look at some kind of worrisome epithelial proliferation. We've got this kind of honeycomb pattern here, or dartboard pattern, or not dartboard, but honeycomb pattern, and piling up of epithelium. And this is worrisome. If we see this, we may recommend that they do more biopsies just to be sure, or keep at least a close watch on that woman, because we may be looking at something that's going to go off to become malignant. So here we're seeing epithelial proliferation, hyperplasia, some atypia, and this particular kind of almost gland within gland formation is important. What we do notice is it's all in the ducts. You see there's nothing outside. This is the duct margin here. There's a basement membrane out there. There's nothing that's infiltrative here. There is a term called sclerosing adenosis where there's a lot of scar tissue and small ducts, and this is always worrisome. New pathologists often make mistakes calling this cancer, and it may well be that it's on its way to that, but generally speaking, no, it is benign. Let's just take a quick look here at some inflammatory changes and ductal changes before we go to breast cancer. We talked about inflammation in the duct of, say, a lactating woman, and this would be kind of an example of that. Here we see ductal ectasia, which means it's dilated, and it contains, this is a duct, there's even some metaplasia, lots of inflammation and junk in that duct work right there. That might be the case, again, in an area where there's been some scarring, injury to the breast, maybe a seatbelt injury and an automobile accident left scarring and isolated or trapped segments of duct. Could also be part of an infection. This is fat necrosis here. This is a thing that occurs again with areas of fat that are squeezed, typically a seat belt or lap or a shoulder belt injury at during a car accident, suddenly thrown forward onto that can lead to dead tissue and bleeding into it, and it can be kind of a serious problem later. It's not going to do anything. It's just dead tissue and scarring, but it scars, and then you get calcium deposits in there, and on x-ray, it may look like you have a cancer in there, but it's not that at all. It's just old scar tissue. All right, well, at any rate, fat necrosis is an important one to remember simply because it leads us astray and it confuses making a real diagnosis. This is a black and white image showing some areas of dead fat and inflammatory changes in what eventually will be scar tissue and may actually look like a cancer. Mammography, but it's not. Here we're looking at a fibroadenoma, again roughly equivalent in frequency to breast cancer, occurs in young women. It's freely movable. That's an important thing. It's not scarred down. It is benign. You don't see the word carcinoma in here. It says fibroadenoma. It's got glandular and fibrous tissue. It's always well encapsulated, well delineated. We don't have a microscopic doggone. Where'd that go? Here we're looking at a woman who has very large tumors in both breasts. On rare occasions, we can have a malignancy of the connective tissue develop in the breast, and that's what this is. It's called a cystosarcoma phalloides. It's sort of a malignant, it's a sarcoma of sorts, mixed sarcoma. This shows some of the changes that we see microscopically with lots and lots of connective tissue proliferation. This is a ductwork in the middle, and we see tremendous amount of ductal proliferation. Some of these are aggressive, some stay local. It's hard to tell what it's going to do. Endoductal papillomas, these are benign tumors, like we had a little adenoma of the colon, or we looked at it in the endocervix. This is in a duct. And they're tiny, but they can bleed, and blood coming out of nipple is a serious finding, and we need to know what it is. Perfectly benign, but it can be kind of scary when the symptoms of a nipple discharge and blood happens to be occurring. At any rate, this is the little papilloma growth in the ductwork itself. Now, breast cancer obviously is very important. About 1 in 6 to 1 in 10 women will develop breast cancer. Lots of things are involved with this. Familial history is very important. There are certain genes that we now know and we're tracking in certain families, and even recommending women have simple mastectomies, leave the skin, put an implant in there, but remove all the breast tissue in certain cases because of the almost certainty that they will in time develop breast cancer. Benign breast disease really does not contribute to, like fibrocystic disease, really does not contribute to breast cancer at all. Birth control pills really don't. But estrogen, unremitting estrogen stimulation will, and people who are obese and have a high fat diet tend to have higher levels of estrogen if there's a lot of body fat. Cigarette smoking contributes to it. And these things, this estrogen stimulation, it seems to be important in the sporadic or average case of breast cancer outside of those situations of family history. Early onset of menstruation and so forth is an important one again also. Here we're looking at Paget's disease. We talked about that in the context of the malignant cells in the epithelial tissue of the skin and the peritoneum. Here we see nipple retraction on this side. That's a bad sign. Scarring and so forth is associated with the cancers. And here we see the roughened epithelium. Well, they're probably malignant cells actually in the epidermis itself. Paget's disease, this, I don't think it's the same picture, but might have been. Here we even have a mitosis. But in this case, we see the malignant cells in the epidermis. Now, what they've done is they basically started growing in the ductwork, and they have grown right out through the duct onto the surface of the skin. Almost certainly it's metastatic, or at least it's invasive into the tissue of the breast itself, but this is just one finding. We don't see this all that often, but it's an important finding, this roughened skin around the nipple on the breast someplace. Here's an invasive cancer. Again, you can get the idea of the star shape, the extension of it, and the fact that it scars itself down to the surrounding tissue is an important physical finding. When we have a woman who has a non-movable breast mass, that's real scary. It's intensely fibrotic. Here we can see the tumor. The malignancies almost always come from the ductal epithelium. And here we see long cords and chains of cells. They're trying to organize themselves as ducts. When we take a look at it, we're going to see it's very monomorphic. It comes from one cell. one cell type, and that's what became malignant. And it begins to spread. You can see it extending into the surrounding adipose tissue. So this would be an infiltrative duct cell carcinoma. Lobular cancer comes from the cells that are kind of the transitional cells from the lobule into the duct, and they tend to be smaller, and here we see them kind of showing what we call an Indian file pattern. This is the one that has about a 10% bilaterality rate, so it's not very high. It's not, say, like fibrocystic disease, which of course is benign, but that is something which we always see at bilateral. In this case, it might be. So we always investigate the other breast when we see it's lobular cancer. Duct cell carcinoma, not so. In terms of male breast, sometimes we do get inflammation and infection in the male breast, but the most common thing would be gynecomastia, again related to estrogen stimulation from something, or estrogen problems with metabolism when we're taking a look at somebody who has liver disease. Cancer of the breast, of a male breast, does occur. Supposedly, oh, this is the gynecomastia, by the way, and I'm just showing the section because it's duct and connective tissue. There's no actual secretory or milk-producing element to it. Cancer of the breast, here we have an example of that, and you can see it arising and extending through right there. I saw a couple of cases of this. They say it's about 1 in 100. My experience was it's not that frequent. In other words, if we have 100 female breast cancers, we'll have one male breast cancer. That's the 1 in 100, not 1 in 100 people. I don't feel it was that frequent at all. But at any rate, they have cancer, and again, it looks like a standard cancer. Here it is grossly, and you can see the extension of it right here up into the skin. This is the skin right there of that breast. And it behaves just like a female cancer of the breast. I don't know particularly what it's related to, estrogen stimulation. I'm not sure about that. But at any rate, it can be just